Today on Seculo, an unhinged professor attacks pro-life students on campus and then threatens a journalist with a machete. We'll talk about that and the DeSantis announcement today on Seculo.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. We're going to get into, of course, the DeSantis news, and we'll cover that extensively tomorrow, both on Seculo and the Seculo Brothers podcast, as most of this will be happening later on this evening. But we're going to explain where you can watch, how it's unique, what's different about it, as well as going through some of the current polls right now and the kind of current climate inside the Republican Party, since what this is about is getting the Republican nomination. But there's something happening that's so shocking right now. And I will tell you, I've got a team of ACLJ attorneys who've already reached out to the organization, but want to make sure that if they need any legal assistance, these students who were totally harassed, this occurred as part of the City University schools in New York. So it's called CUNY, that you might know of SUNY, the State Universities of New York. There's also the City Universities of New York, which are based in New York City. This happened at Hunter College, which is a large college inside in Manhattan. And there was a group of pro-life students doing what we call tabling. If you remember college, in the student halls or student unions, there would be specific days set up where you could sign up to host a table and you could promote your organization. Well, the pro-life student group signed up, followed all the rules, had their information out. If you wanted to talk to them, you could talk to them. If you wanted to get into kind of a back and forth with them, of course, you could do that as well. These were brave students setting this up at Hunter College in New York. But what they probably didn't expect was for a university professor to start harassing them, screaming and cursing at them, and then destroying their table. Can we play it for everybody? Do we have the video to play for everybody? This is what happened to a group of pro-life students at Hunter College in New York.
What are you going to do, like anti-trans next? Is that what you're going to do next?
I mean, no, we're talking about abortion.
This is bull. This is violent. You're triggering my students.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
You're not, because you can't even have a baby. So you don't even know what that is. You don't even know what this is. Get this out of here.
There you go. Now, you would think that teacher would be put on leave immediately. Maybe not fired immediately. They got to do their investigation. But certainly, she took an act of violence.
Yeah.
She used profanity to attack students who were there legally. So she demeaned them since they were triggering her students. But you know what? The student body there, the teachers union there, the PSC Graduate Center, which is the labor union chapter that represents the CUNY professors and graduate assistants, said at that point that it stood by Rodriguez, quote, against right-wing anti-abortion backlash, added that this is from the professor labor union logo. They said that her actions were justified and that the pro-life students set up a table and prominent banner to propagate, as how many times we've heard this, dangerously false propaganda. Her actions to shut down the tabling were fully justified and part of a long and celebrated legacy of confronting groups such as military recruiters. Yeah. Okay, so now was this Vietnam again?
But then, it was only about a minute left.
Okay, but it gets much worse. because she doesn't get fired for that. But then the New York Post does a little follow-up. So they show up at her door to ask her questions, which you can do as a journalist. You don't have to answer the door and you don't have to talk to them. She did, and this is what she did.
Away from my door. Get the away from my door.
Let's get out of here. You can't do that.
Okay.
So if you're just listening, yeah, it was a reporter approached her at her door, knocked on the door. She comes to the door with a machete. Puts it up against the reporter's neck.
But Logan, we come back from the break. It gets worse.
Here you go.
This is not yet over, this altercation. So not only has she destroyed the pro-life students' their table and cursed at them and made accusations and gotten support from the student, from the teacher's union, she then puts a machete on the neck of a New York Post reporter, and it gets worse. We have the video. Share this with your friends and family. You want to watch this. We come back on Seculo.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
After nearly 50 years, Roe v. Wade, the tragic ruling that manufactured a so-called right to abortion, has been overturned by the United States Supreme Court. This is the moment the ACLJ has been fighting for. It's the biggest victory we've achieved in our 3-decade-long fight against the soulless abortion industry. And believe me, abortionists like Planned Parenthood are devastated. This victory would not have been possible without the steadfast prayer and support of ACLJ members like you. On behalf of the entire ACLJ, I thank you for standing with us against the abortion industry and helping us save defenseless babies. I thank you for making this victory possible. And I ask you for your continued prayer and support as we continue to battle against barbaric new abortion laws across our nation.
So, you've got students in Hunter College. It's a city university in New York. They set up a pro-life table. They go through the process called tabling. It's known in college campuses. If you attended colleges, you had this all the time. Sometimes it'd be very controversial groups. Sometimes it'd be kind of benign. And, of course, sometimes military recruiters, job recruiters. The list goes on. They set up, but a lot of times it's for on-campus organizations to recruit new members. So the pro-life group does it, Students for Life. And then a professor, who I don't know if has any connection to these students whatsoever, just sees the display and loses it on these students. I want to walk you through all of it because we haven't even played the worst part yet. I know that sounds hard after you've already seen a machete to a New York Post reporter's neck. It actually gets worse. But let's, for those people just joining us, let's show you what happened on May 2nd at Hunter College to those students at the pro-life table.
Educating. You're not educating. This is propaganda. What are you going to do, like anti-trans next? Is that what you're going to do next?
I mean, no, we're talking about abortion.
This is bull. Yeah. This is violent. You're triggering my students.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
No, you're not. Because you can't even have a baby. So you don't even know what that is. You don't even know what this is. Get this out of here.
Notice that the students didn't push back or fight back. They let her have her rage.
They know better.
She had her violence, and guess what? The teachers' union said they stood by Rodriguez against right-wing anti-abortion backlash. They said that the table and prominent banners were propagating dangerously false propaganda and that her actions to shut down the tabling were fully justified and part of a long and celebrated legacy at the CUNY schools, the CUNY schools. They also said, well, they do this to military recruiters as well, as if they're sometime, I guess, like living in like Vietnam or something like that. Okay, but then, so the video is from, that's from May 2nd. Students for Life releases the video just a couple days ago. And the New York Post reporter goes yesterday to the home of the professor, which you're able to do as a reporter. You don't have to talk to the reporter. You don't have to answer the door if you don't know who it is or if they say they're from a news organization. You can just keep your door closed. But Professor Rodriguez, she did not do that. Take a listen to what she first did.
Away from my door. Get the away from my door.
Let's get out of here. You can't do that.
Okay, and while we have time, let's like try to get a split screen of that to quick copy. Because she had a machete on the neck of that reporter. A machete. That is a machete on the neck of the reporter. That's how she opened her door. Not just aggressively saying, get out, get away, which they would have done. No, no. She takes out a machete and puts it on his neck. But then it gets worse. You're starting to see, if you're watching the broadcast, it gets worse. So they leave. But what does she do? She chases him down the streets of the Bronx with a machete out, which, by the way, if law enforcement was around, could have turned into a very, very dangerous situation very quickly. Again, there's no audio on this, so for those of you listening on radio or listening to the podcast, she is chasing them down with a machete in the public streets of the Bronx. Public streets of the Bronx, full speed running.
With a machete.
Now, ultimately here, she does get fired. It took a lot. She had to turn over the student's table. She had to then put a machete on her.
They said that was fine.
She wasn't going to get fired for that.
No.
So that's what we're pointing out. That professor wasn't even put on leave for destroying a student group's setup that they had absolute authority to be there. So we're in contact now, the ACLJ, with the organization to make sure if they need any legal assistance, because it's that two-tiered legal system where ultimately the school only had to act because she literally took out a machete and chased, put one on a reporter's neck. So that's a major crime right there. And then went into the public streets brandishing a machete, chasing people down the streets as if she was going to use it, which could result in the loss of life or serious bodily harm. Imagine if that woman ended up being shot by police, and then we would have a whole mess, right? But I guess thankfully in that situation, there weren't police there in that part of New York at the time, because you saw that, Logan, you'd probably shoot her.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's we have a call actually asking that specific question. Can we go to Jerry, who's calling in Rhode Island? Jerry, you're on the air.
Hello, folks. I did see the video. I did not know the time between May 2nd and the machete incident. It sounds like she was fired as a result of machetes, but based on that, that's assault with a deadly weapon in public with a video. Has that woman been arrested?
Not at this time, because it's New York, and she's a liberal activist. Now, ultimately, again, we want to get involved here. We can't get someone arrested. That's not what the ACLJ's job is. Those are prosecutors' jobs. I'd have to look more into the DA's office in the Bronx. We know that, you know, if it's in Manhattan, it wouldn't be very good. It
certainly should happen.
But yes. I mean, I would hope that if it doesn't matter what your skin color is, what your politics is, if you chase down someone with the street with a machete and actually put it to their neck, you are going to be arrested and charged and likely convicted of some crime. And by the way, you're probably not the right kind of person to be in a university setting teaching young people who, yes, are adults, but do not sign up to go to school to be harassed and defamed and attacked physically as they were by having their having what was on their table pushed into them. I mean, there's crime after crime after crime after crime committed, and it literally took a liberal school, Logan. Liberal school. It took a professor threatening to kill someone.
Right. Not
before
even just
they would
violence.
Take action.
Not even just violence. Not even just disruption. You're talking about on camera, a professor at one of these colleges, because of the fact. Remember what the originating fact is. Originating fact is she didn't care for the fact that there was a pro-life table. Supporting essentially like a students for life type situation, not necessarily students for life, but in that kind of vein, it may have been. And then when a reporter approached her, because she destroyed their table, ripped off all the stuff. When a reporter approached her, it was Students of Life or for Life of America. When they approached her at her home, knocked on the door, which by the way, happens to a lot of people when the press is trying to get a statement from you, whether you like that or not, just what happens. Instead of ignoring the door, instead of yelling, hey, go away, I'm not going to talk to you, or no comment, opens the door, pretty much says, I'm not going to be talking to go away, and then grabs a machete and pushes it towards someone's throat. They leave, and on the way out, she thought, you know what? That's not enough. I'm going to chase this person down. And that third final act of aggression, all based on the fact that she destroyed a pro-life student group's table of brochures, was enough to finally get her fired. But still, not quite arrested, not quite really having justice served just yet, but hopefully we're going to get involved in that.
Yes, it's Hunter College says she has been relieved of her duties at Hunter College effective immediately and will not be returning to teach at the school. But what else will she be returning to do?
Yeah, obviously they're very careful in the way they word things. So that's a...
Listen, they're in a situation, they got to fire someone. I understand that. They have to go through that process.
Never fun.
Never fun and never easy. But... she should have been fired the moment she attacked the students at least put on a long-term leave an investigation done. Because if she's treating students like that at a public setting on campus where they are legally there to table for a political cause she might not believe in, but she can't attack them physically. She could get into a discussion with them, but she can't curse at them, push them, throw their table back at them and their materials back at them. That alone should have been enough. It shouldn't have taken a machete incident. I mean, how crazy is it that we're saying that? A machete incident to have her relieved of her duties as a teacher. I have a feeling she ends up somewhere inside the
system,
education system there. It's huge. She just might not be a professor for a few years while this has got attention on it. That's why we want to get involved with the ACLJ. We're working on, we don't just talk about these issues. We always try to find ways that we can assist those who have been wronged. The first group who was wronged here was those students on campus. And think about how this silences speech on campus. If this could happen to you, and then you see these teachers are crazy enough to pull out a knife, a machete, are you just going to shut up in class? It has the effect, which is a First Amendment issue, of silencing and freezing out speech, which is the opposite of what college is supposed to be about.
Yep, absolutely. Hey, I'd love to hear from you. There's a lot of calls coming in at 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. We'll get to some of those coming up. We'll also continue on the discussion. We only have about a minute and a half, so why don't we save Steve? We'll save you for the next segment or two. But we are going to take some mini calls, so give us a call at 1-800-684-3110 and continue talking about some of the other ways that the ACLJ is getting involved coming up in the next segment.
Yeah, absolutely right. There's, an attack by the Biden administration on so many of the cases we've won and victories we've had and laws on the books to make it clear about, you know, like Bible clubs on campus and student religious freedom on campus. And they have started wiping those from the Federal Register. So we're going to talk to Abby Sutherland, senior counsel with the ACLJ, about that, but also a victory we had in a similar situation. It still happens where a student brings a Bible to school and gets told by the school to take that Bible home. You can't have that here. It's still something we deal with since our founding of the ACLJ and that we're dealing with in 2023. If anything like this has happened to you, and it doesn't have to be as extreme as a machete incident, for goodness sakes, but the Bible, you know, being told you can't bring your Bible to school or having your tabling destroyed at a college campus by someone who works for the college, you need to contact us so we can represent you and make that wrong right. So you contact us at aclj.org/help. When you fill out the information, you will be contacted by an ACLJ attorney. And of course, we do all this work for free because of our donors. Donate today at aclj.org. Welcome back to Secul. As we have showed you during the first two segments of the broadcast, there's always an attack on religious speech and on pro-life speech, and a lot of times those go hand in hand. At the government level, whether it's university school systems, and in this case it was the city universities of New York, which are not always friendly places for pro-life students or religious or conservative students. But we're seeing guidelines set up by the federal government to make the matters even worse. You know, we talked about how a lot of these situations the ACLJ has been able to handle for decades very quickly because we've won the cases at the highest levels in court, the Supreme Court. There's legislation at the federal level that makes it clear. You could literally go to our website, take a page from it into your school if you had an issue and win, and you would get the issue resolved. But I want to bring in Abby Sutherland, our senior counsel with the ACLJ, because Abby, something we're seeing and you wrote about in a blog for the ACLJ, which is very dangerous, is how the Biden administration is undermining religious liberty. They are not trying to rewrite the law. They can't do that. But they're removing important guidance. So it makes it tougher for schools and also the parents and kids who go to those schools to understand what is and is not acceptable when it comes to religious liberty at the public school setting.
That's right. For decades, there has been guidance issued by each administration and or clarified as case law develops on teacher rights, student rights in the educational setting. And the purpose is to combine in one document all of the law so that you can easily and quickly reference it, and so that even a teacher or student can take a look and know exactly what their rights are. For example, as a student, can I form a student group? What can our bylaws say about that? As a teacher, in my personal capacity, what can I do as far as prayer and that sort of thing? And then in my official capacity, what is permitted and what is not permitted when I am fulfilling job responsibilities at the school?
They went on to say, so they started with the new guidance removes, as you talked about, any mention of the tradition of see you at the poll, that prayer event. They just any mention of it whatsoever, which means now anytime someone who signs up to host one of those at the school and has like a sponsor from a student group or and however that works at their school, the school is going to go to the guidelines and not see it mentioned. And so they're going to then have to make their own decision. We know oftentimes they're scared of getting sued, so they'll make the wrong decision, which could lead to more and more of these cases. So people need to contact us at aclj.org/help, especially, you know, we're already preparing for back to school as school comes to an end, because that's a lot of time when these things come about. It's when there's new student groups being set up, when See You at the Poll begins, which is the beginning of the year. But it also removes an entire section on the leadership of religious student groups, which has always been an issue. Do you need a faculty sponsor? The students then actually lead the faculty sponsors there really just to be, remember at my college, which is a little different than high school, but the faculty sponsor for the Republican club wasn't a Republican. You just had to have a faculty sponsor. This was a time when they were willing to do that, even if they didn't believe. You had to have it for the school's purposes. And they just take all this away.
There's an entire section that has been deleted by the Biden administration that gives guidance to student groups on a question that we get very often, which is, as a student leader with a religious student group, is it okay that we require our leaders to subscribe to a particular religious belief or to a particular religious affiliation? The answer to that is absolutely yes. However, and that used to be provided very clearly in the guidance. However, the entire paragraph has been deleted from the new guidance.
The absurd situation, Logan, where you have it set up where it's like you have a, let's say it's very specific, a Baptist student group. And you would say, okay, so we're going to have Baptist students lead the group. And that used to be clear in the guidance. And now, you know, a Satanist could run for it.
Can be anything. That's
right.
Or
they could take it over.
Yeah,
that was why they had the guidance. So the groups weren't effectively taken over by bad actors.
You want people who represent whatever the organization is or whatever your denomination is, if you will, to be that representative and to be proud about that and be loud about it, be the person you want as one of the faces of it. But of course, now in this situation, we're going to remove that. And that's the big concern. It's not just... because you're going to say, well, what Satanist, you said, would want to run the Baptist Student Union? Well, the one who wants it to shut it down.
Right. And so that's why you have these guidances in place. They also, this one I thought would be upsetting to a whole host of religious groups, not just Christian, because honestly, a lot of the Christian holidays are built into the public school system, whether the radical left likes it or not. But a lot of other major holidays, whether you're Jewish or Muslim and other faith traditions, are not. And it removed guidance on those students being excused so they weren't getting penalized for missing school for their religious tradition. So, I mean, this applies broad, not just to Christian students, but any religious students. And so now the school might think, well, they missed a day. I don't have their religious calendar. So now they're going to get penalized as missing a day of school.
Right. We actually just got this question about 2 weeks ago from a parent. Their child wanted to attend Easter services that carried over for a 3-day period. It was a religious observance. And their child was going to miss just a half a day, but she wanted to make sure that the child's absence would be excused. They just, within their family, have a policy that they don't just miss school for anything, but this was incredibly important. And in past, we would refer them to this document. And now that has been removed. You know, another really shocking removal or deletion in this guidance is clarification that school administrators cannot censor student speech when they think that the student's speech is too religious. That's an incredibly important concept. Really, the truth is school administrators cannot censor student private religious speech whatsoever. And the fact that that clarification has been removed is a clear indication of the attempt here to muddy the water and to give school administrators perhaps or to encourage them to censor that speech.
Me, Abby, I want to bring it to that the case we've worked on with a third grader who was told, bring your favorite book to school. We've heard this over and over with the ACLJ. Of course, unless it's the Bible. And this third grader brought the Bible. I want to point this out because here at the ACLJ, we could win every one of these cases, every one of these scenarios. Yes, they have made it a gray area, but we've got all the facts, all the laws on our side. You've just got to contact us at aclj.org/help if you feel like this is happening to you. And I feel like there's going to be more of these because the schools are not going to have good guidance to rely on. But Abby, tell us about that victory.
So we were able to send a demand letter, and in that demand letter, we cited the guidance, which very clearly outlined previously, prior to these changes, what the law requires of the school. And we quickly were able to resolve the matter, as we should, because case law is very clear on that issue.
So there you go. I mean, you can win these, sometimes without even having to go to court, but the schools are going to be more and more confused. And so we are more and more prepared at the ACLJ to take on what we've traditionally done these cases by the hundreds, if not thousands. And we know there's going to be more, even if they're not bad actors, more confused school administrators, because they're not going to be able to go to guidance that they receive and be clear about, well, is that prayer too religious? Or should I be allowing these religious groups on campus? Or can I give them, do I have to mark them down as absent in a penalizing way? Or can it be excused because of their religious belief, if they've got something to attend because they're Jewish, or because of a Monday service for Easter or Friday service for Easter, these kind of things, which were given to them so that they didn't have to go to court, didn't end up with demand letters, has all been taken away. But we're not going to stop fighting. We're going to actually, I think, have to fight that much more. Now, to do that, we've got to hear from you, because we know it's going to start happening, especially when we start a new school year. And that's not, I know school just ended, and a lot of places is about to end, but it's also starts restarting right away. So contact us at aclj.org/help. If you need assistance, if you're a school administrator and you need assistance, you can contact us too. aclj.org/help. We'll be right back. Second half hour coming up.
Keeping you informed and engaged now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
So before we get into what will be the biggest political news probably today and tomorrow, which is the official announcement by Ron DeSantis that he is running for president, and the way he's going to do that uniquely in kind of a multi-step process, and we're going to explain that for you in the next couple of segments of the broadcast, and I want to take your calls on that. Before I get to the calls on DeSantis, and that's at 1-800-684-3110, and my first question to you is, are you open to being, if you were a Trump voter, Are you open to becoming a DeSantis voter? I mean, that's my first question. And so are you going into this primary with an open mind? 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And then ultimately, I'm going to want to get your thoughts tomorrow on what you thought about this very unique rollout. People are doing this very differently now. It's not always the traditional, I give a speech and that's the beginning of my campaign. That's usually part of it. It still is certainly part of it. But it's not the only part of it. We saw that from the Trump campaign, too. It didn't start that way. So let's go to the phones. I want to take the calls that came in about just this absurdity that happened at Hunter College. We're reaching out to those student groups right now if they need legal support. We're also, of course, as Abby just went through, we're ready to go to court on behalf of all these students and even school administrators that are going to have so many questions because the Biden administration has made the religious liberty guidelines on public schools that much more confusing to push their liberal agenda. But we have won all those cases. We have the law and statutes on our side. But to take those into court or take those to the school, you have to contact us at aclj.org/help. But Logan, let's get to those phone calls.
Yep, let's go ahead. Let's go to line one. Michael's calling from Colorado. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I just have a comment or two. We just saw this not too long ago where a bike messenger gets assaulted in a McDonald's and then gets arrested after he brandished a axe, which he calmly got out of his bag and then, you know, smashed up the place a little bit. But it was out of self-defense, and yet he got arrested.
Oh, we lost you there, but I think we got your comment.
Yes. In any other case, this person, because he got video of it, now released by New York Post, they should be arrested now. You know where they live. Certainly a warrant should be out. They brandished a weapon against someone's neck and then chase them down the street, which causes all sorts of different legal violations because you're putting a whole host of people in jeopardy of potential loss of life and endangerment to their body, even if it's not loss of life. But because of, you can imagine the situation, how that, out of control that can get. Imagine a police officer sees that, starts opening fire, other people get injured. The hypotheticals continue. You don't have to go to hypotheticals to arrest this person. They brandished a weapon. They put it up against someone's neck. They then, after that person left, decided to go after them again and chase them down the street with a weapon. They should be right now arrested and behind bars and going through a legal process. As of right now, there's no indication that's been done yet. We'll keep looking. New York system can take some time if you're not real high profile like Donald Trump. So it could take some time.
A lot of attention, though. So it's right now.
You would think that they're going to have to arrest this person. And rightfully so, because anyone else they would have arrested for doing something like this, regardless of the color of their skin, regardless of their job or their motivations.
Yeah, absolutely. We only got a minute left. Let's go ahead. We'll wait on Waylon and we'll hold him till the next segment. So Waylon, stay on hold. If you want to call in, we're getting a lot of great feedback. And if you want to call in about the DeSantis announcement, which is coming sometime this evening. And I believe he's going to be making the rounds on all media after that. I think Fox already said they have the post-announcement. The first announcement's coming with a special guest that was pretty interesting. You know, like you said, very different way to roll out a campaign. I think a smart way. I think an interesting way. I'd love to hear from you. 1-800-684-3110.
You know who's hosting that, Fox? That's that show that doesn't have a host show.
They just said it, and I'm blanking on it. Rewind the thing. They said who gets Trey Gowdy. Trey Gowdy gets the first interview with Ron DeSantis. Sorry, I had to like play it back in my head because we had the monitor showing in the studio.
They were friends in Congress. Yeah. They've got a relationship.
I thought you said they're friends in college. You're like, they were friends in roommates. Congress.
Congress. They're Tea Party guys that came up together. So that makes sense. They would, that if you were the DeSantis team, that's someone you would like.
A friendly.
Especially when it's this uncertainty time slot, but still, you know, prime time. So again, we'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. We want to hear from you. That's 1-800-684-3110. All right, welcome back to Secular. So we're going to get into DeSantis news and walk through that. Did we have another call on the other matter before?
Yeah, we can take this. Let's go to line three. I believe Waylon is calling.
Yeah, we'll kind of finish that issue up for now. We're going to be working with clients potentially on that.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. My question is, being that the DOJ took actions against allegations of parents speaking about violence at school board meetings, are they going to step in and take action against this teacher actually doing violent acts against the student and violent acts against the news media with his machete?
You would think they should, but I highly doubt that they will. The one positive is that New York Post is owned by News Corp. There's civil actions they can take. Yeah. There's obviously,
and you get attention on it quickly.
Yes, they've got. No, I mean, we're talking about it. Where we're talking about it from is how absurd it is that it took a machete for this teacher to be fired after what she did to those pro-life students, where she assaulted them, shoved all of their materials into their face, screaming and cursing at them while they were legally in the student hall tabling, which is a normal process on college campuses. You can disagree with those tables. You can even have a little discussion, a little argument with them if you want. But what you can't do is start throwing things at them and destroying their setup. That can be a criminal action in itself, an assault. And, of course, that wasn't enough. The student, the teachers union actually supported those actions, and the school did nothing there. It wasn't until a reporter knocked on her door and she literally brandished a machete, but didn't just brandish it. Put it up against the reporter's neck, then they leave calmly and quietly, say, okay, never mind. And she chases them on the streets of New York in the Bronx with a machete, like some kind of third world country, where she is brandishing a machete against a reporter who didn't even have a chance to ask her a question. But that she lost her job over. So we live in a country, it should not take that much. We're not talking about the levels it takes to prosecute someone for criminal activity. Losing your job does not have to rise to that level.
They know where she lives.
Right. The DA knows where she lives. They know who she is. They know she's been fired for violence. She should be arrested. She should go through a process. She has every right to defend herself, but she should be arrested. And what we want to do is make sure we're protecting those pro-life student groups on campus, because that should have been enough for her to at least be suspended for a long enough period of time where a serious investigation was done, maybe even a forced discussion between her and the students that they may disagree on policy, but she was totally inappropriate in the way she cursed at them and tried to destroy their property. But why would she do that when her own teachers union is backing her up and saying, by the way, don't just treat pro-life students like this. Treat military recruiters like this who are offering your students jobs, not forcing them. You know, we don't have a forced military in the U.S., but they're offering your students a job and a career. You don't like that job and a career, so we also support you going after our military. It just shows you, Logan, how messed up things are inside our colleges and universities.
Yeah, it's a big problem that's happened. Look, it's been happening forever, but now we know that's always been a definitely liberal-leaning inside these universities. But now, yeah, absolutely. And kids from their professors. This isn't a kid. Like, you can understand if this got heated.
But protest your kids.
Yeah, understand if like a student gets frustrated. Because look, that's sort of the height of your, the sort of the beginning of your political activity. And sometimes that's maybe when you're the hottest because you haven't spent any time in the real world where you have to deal with people from all different walks of life. This is when you get aggressive. But that's not what happened here. This was a calm, seemingly calm Students for Life table with, you know, brochures and pamphlets out. And this was an attack from a teacher, from a professor within this university. Really a disturbing fact. But I do think we got to move on and talk a little bit about what's happening in the world of politics.
So tonight, Ron DeSantis will officially announce his candidacy. He's doing all the paperwork filing as we speak, his candidacy for president of the United States. He's released a little teaser video.
Yeah, it was a cool video.
Very quick teaser video. I don't know if we pulled that, but it's very, very quick. It's more for like Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah, I think he and his wife posted it. I don't even think it went beyond
it's
that.
Just kinda, it's not him talking. It's a voiceover, but it's like a well-done video. But what's interesting is he's going to sit down tonight on Twitter Spaces, which even people who use Twitter, I used a lot, had to ask our producers, like, what is Spaces? Because I do see people going live on there sometimes, but I don't know what it is. I know there's been a lot of changes to Twitter. So let's first explain to people. This is happening at 6 p.m. Eastern time on Twitter Spaces. So likely you have to have a Twitter account to
view this. Yeah, I'm someone who
tell
pops
people
in on a Twitter
how this,
space
how this works.
Twitter Spaces, if this is, like I said, it may roll out differently than previous, because we also know at the same time the Daily Wire announced they're all going to Twitter. You know, we're back on Twitter. There's a lot of people who are moving their content to Twitter as well. So maybe this pops up on video. But the conversation, usually it happens is there's a leader of a conversation, maybe a couple leaders, and then you'll see who's in this live chat, if you will, or live audio feed. And it's more like a live podcast. I think that's the easiest way to put it. It's a live podcast discussion, and people can pop on and discuss. I'm sure this is going to be a very targeted one. We know it will be with Elon Musk and Ron DeSantis. And then it seems like the blitz will be coming shortly after that. So this will probably be to a, you know, a more limited audience, but I think it's pretty interesting. Look, putting yourself up, the first thing you announce is with Elon Musk, who I'm a fan of, but can certainly throw you a curveball. It's going to be pretty interesting to see, too. I kind of like it. It's a little edgy. It's a little wild. It's a little bit who knows, like, what's going to happen. I like that for the beginning of a DeSantis campaign because I think he's been in a bit of a slump the last few months. We've seen the numbers go down.
Yeah.
We've seen his popularity drop. To have something kind of cool, I like it, and something different. So it's pretty fascinating.
Unless they launch a video function of this would only be audio.
Yeah.
So it'd be live audio. So it'd be kind of like listening to a traditional podcast, which a lot of the world who listen to podcasts now is assuming that's also you can watch podcasts like ours.
This is a live audio
feed. So it's a live audio feed. It does have a moderator who is a close friend of Elon Musk, who helped him start with PayPal, and is a major DeSantis backer. He'll moderate it, David Sacks. So I guess that puts Musk in the position of kind of questioner. And so you'll have a moderator, a questioner. I don't know about how long this will go. It should be very unique because Elon Musk is going to ask questions that a normal political journalist would not.
Right, and it's supposed to be an interview, right?
Right.
It's not just he's coming on, make his announcement, and going. So this is just part of him being in this is announcing he'll be running for president.
That will be followed by him then going on to Fox News at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And Trey Gowdy will be, that's that position left by Tucker Carlson that has not been filled yet full-time.
Yep, yep.
Trey Gowdy will be hosting that with Ron DeSantis. That makes a lot of sense to me, not because Trey already has a show on Fox News, has been one of those rotating hosts, but also because he was in Congress at the same time as Ron DeSantis, so they've got a relationship there. And I think he's one of the people inside Fox that maybe isn't as close to Trump.
Yeah.
Where, so it doesn't feel
a little
like
safer. So he's going to go from sort of the risky Elon to then move his way over to a more trusted source. Not trusted, but he can probably trust.
Some of the risk goes down with Elon because I'd say the older Republican voter is probably not going to get on Twitter Spaces tonight.
No.
They're only going to see what gets reported out of it. So unless it's just disastrous for Ron DeSantis, which I don't think Elon Musk is trying to do that.
No.
I think he wants more people to use this program on Twitter.
Yeah.
I think that they'll see the clips from it, and that's about it. They're not going to probably log on to Twitter.
I mean, it's no accident that Ron DeSantis is doing this on Twitter. The Daily Wire announced they're moving all their content to Twitter. All of this
for free?
No one really is sure.
They are working obviously on paywalls on Twitter.
Tucker announced he's moving to Twitter. Elon clearly has a big push to get this sort of conservative voice over to his platform.
Are we putting ours out full time?
Our content, it will be. If it's not up right now, it will be up within the next little bit. And we've been off and on Twitter. Because honestly, we're going to have that conversation here. A platform like Rumble, it's a video platform. It works better for us. It's a bit more like you're watching a TV show. So we've enjoyed that. But you got to go where your people are. And if they're going to push people over to Twitter, then certainly we're going to be a part of that discussion as well. That's where you can get more eyeballs. But this conversation is going to happen. We're going to take some calls in the next segment. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Of, are you open to a DeSantis candidacy? Are you open to voting for Ron DeSantis will be really the question.
Yeah, are you just locked in for Donald Trump or another candidate?
Or Tim Scott or Vivek or any of these?
It seems like to me the big question is, are you locked into Donald Trump or are you open to the rest of the field?
Yeah.
And again, I really like Tim Scott. I've liked what Vivek Ramaswamy's had to say. Don't know if he's ready to be president of the United States yet, but I do like the policies and ideas he's put out, certainly, and the conversations he's able to have. I mean, he shut down Don Lemon, and Don Lemon was fired the next workday.
Right.
But let me just give you, as we go into this break, kind of where to start this off at, the Real Clear Politics average. Because we want to look at this, and then probably about a week from today, we want to look at where this number is then. So give DeSantis some time. It's not fair to just give it a day or two. Let him do his full rollout. Right now, the Real Clear Politics average of Republican voters, Donald Trump is at 56% in the primary. Ron DeSantis is the closest at number two, without announcing yet, at 19%. Everyone else is in single digits. Mike Pence is the next highest at 5%. Haley at 4%. Ramaswamy at 3, and Rick Scott almost at 2, and then it gets into the ones or below even 1. So it is really Trump, DeSantis, if the other people are willing to move from their candidates of choice. The question we'll want to know a week from today is, not that DeSantis has to be equal yet, but does he get a 20-point bump?
Is there a pop when he actually announces?
A significant one. Yeah. That is what people are going to want to know. We're going to take your calls on it. 1-800-684-3110. All right, welcome back to Secular. So we know what's going to happen tonight. 6 p.m., you go to Twitter, and there's usually like something up top on your Twitter page on your phone that says like there's a live event going on. That at 6 p.m., it is Elon Musk interviewing Ron DeSantis, who will be announcing his official campaign for president of the United States. It has a moderator, David Sachs, who is a friend of Elon Musk. So there's a moderator, there's a questioner, that's Elon Musk, and there's Ron DeSantis. That, again, is being reported as audio only. We did say that maybe Twitter would release a new, they could use this to release a new program like video. That's a little risky with something this high profile, but it looks like it will be audio only. But then later on, Ron DeSantis will take a more traditional route going on Fox News at 8 p.m. Eastern time, so just a couple hours later, to go on with his a friend Trey Gowdy, who is in that time slot that doesn't have a host right now, and they'll do another probably half hour, 45 minutes about why he's running. And then I'm sure it will be followed by a then traditional kind of campaign rally or rallies across Florida and the country.
Yeah, I really like this strategy.
A couple of new things and some
different
traditional things.
Well, like for me, would I have watched a traditional him going up and speaking? I probably would have caught it for a few minutes, seen what it's like. Am I going to go on Twitter tonight, though, and listen to him on Twitter Spaces, talk to Elon Musk, the richest man in the world? Yeah, I'm going to do that because I find that pretty fascinating. I don't even care if you like Ron DeSantis or even Elon Musk. You can't lie. That's not an that's kind of must listen, I guess, if you want to say in terms of the way Twitter's running.
When Elon Musk talks, it's culturally important.
And it's always fascinating. So it'll be interesting to hear his point of view. And that gets a even if it's slightly younger, even if you're talking about me, 37 years old, 37 to 45, different than the Fox News audience, which tends to be 55 and up. Let's go ahead, though, and take some phone calls. We got a lot of people with a lot of things to say. Let's go to Jeff, calling from North Carolina on line two. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. How are you today? Thank you for taking my call. I have been a Trump voter, but I'm more than willing to vote for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in the Republican primary.
So you'd be willing to, at this point, are you more likely to vote for DeSantis, or are you going to kind of see how the primary plays out?
I'm going to more than likely vote for DeSantis. I've got nothing against Donald Trump. This is not about me being anti-Trump. This is just, you know, I want it because my concern is that you're going to have people on the left look at Donald Trump and poke fun at him because of his age and say he's old. You know, and I want to give Ron DeSantis a shot because we're going to need a good, strong conservative leader, you know, for 2028 and perhaps even going into 2032, I should say.
I think a lot of people have the knowledge that that is going to be a big talking point, which is if you're saying that Joe Biden is too old, how are you not saying the same thing about Trump? Obviously, if you see them on stage, it's vastly different.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can easily make that connection, but it's going to happen. You have that, and right now you have a pretty big campaign against Casey DeSantis, his wife. What happened is that's really backfiring. And what's backfiring is people like, you know, my wife and other people
I don't
who
think
are
people like that generally.
No, I think the people who are more family conservatives, if you will, look at that and go, I don't care for this. I don't like the rhetoric. They could put themselves in their own shoes. She's a recently cancer survivor. She has small kids. So I think that that's going to only, honestly, they'll end up playing to their advantage because I think more people are going to be talking about Casey DeSantis than they ever have before. And this may give her an opportunity. So interesting call from Jeff. But then I think we have some people on the other side of this, still from North Carolina. We got a lot of North Carolina repping in Colorado today. Chris is calling North Carolina. Chris, you're on the air. Keep it a little quick because we want to get through as many calls as we can.
Sure, thanks. Appreciate it. Listen, I don't understand anybody who voted for Trump and is a Trump supporter would vote for anybody else. Not to say I don't like DeSantis. I think he should stay where he is. We need our coverage, our conservative coverage across the land. His time will come. And that's only if you believe we're going to have a free and open election. 2016 was it. I think the Democrats have corrupted everything so badly and it's so deep, the state, that we will never have a free election. But Trump's policies worked across the board.
I think that DeSantis is not going to run away from those policies. I mean, I think that there might be one or two where he has some differences on. I think a lot of it is going to be based off personality, not even so much the toughness. And again, I'm not defending one or the other. I don't see him saying, like, I'm an anti-MAGA. And I don't think we should put America first. Or that, you know, he did get a little pushback when he tried to take a more Trump line on Ukraine. And certainly switch that because he does have support from more traditional Republicans. There is a group out there that sees DeSantis as the way to kill the Donald Trump MAGA movement.
Yeah, I think so. And you're going to see it play out very interestingly. I look forward to watching how this all goes because I'm just a fan of this. Like, this is it. This is another moment to me where I'm like, now we're talking. Now we got someone else in the field and at least we're going to have some fun here. Because for a while, it felt like it was such a Trump is going to run away with this. And he's still very well likely. I mean, poll-wise, he would. But at least we're going to have an interesting conversation, and I like the way they're starting to roll this out. Let's go ahead and head back to the phones. Let's go to Karen in Florida. See where Karen lays. You're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead with your comment.
Can you hear me? I love Ron DeSantis, but I think he's really good for Florida. I'd like to see him stay here, and I'm a Trump supporter, and I would vote for Donald.
Is the reason why you're sticking with Donald, one is that you kind of want to keep your governor in the position he is because you think he's done a good job for where you live. So I understand that. What's your reason for is it sticking with Trump? Do you want to kind of see him finish the job? Is it because that's what I hear from a lot of Trump supporters and people I know that work on that campaign, his campaign and worked his White House, is they felt like they were kind of robbed of their
of the 4 years to finish out the draining of the swamp and really their foreign policy, which was starting to make huge strides in the Middle East.
That's exactly how I feel. Exactly. And I would love to see what he can do.
Thank you so much for calling. We're going to keep this conversation going. We got one time for one more call. Likely. Let's go to Amber in Tennessee. Amber, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I think I would vote for DeSantis over Trump, but I think the bigger picture more than likely is who is going to have the best chance at beating Biden? Or if Biden doesn't run, is Newsom going to come out of the woodwork? And it wouldn't, you know, Newsom against Trump, I'm not sure. But Newsom against DeSantis, I think he might have a lot of people that would go for DeSantis over Trump. I would love to see a DeSantis Lake ticket.
Amber, sorry, we're running out of time. I
think
we appreciate
it's all these calculations you have to make. I think she's about to get into vice president. I will always say this. It's more and more important who your vice president choice is. It used to not be very important, honestly. And statistically, people do not vote for who your vice president is. John McCain is a great example of that. He had an excellent vice presidential candidate who fired up the Republican base in Sarah Palin, but that did not help him get over the line even close.
Yeah, and you start thinking like
her fault
Edwards
either.
And some of these guys can't even remember.
It's the person at the top of the ticket who drives the votes and drives the passion. Certainly it wasn't Dick Cheney driving the passion.
Yeah, it wasn't Paul Ryan.
And it wasn't Joe Biden
for
Barack Obama. And it wasn't Kamala Harris. The question is, again, a lot of hypotheticals. I think we're getting pretty late in the game to see Joe Biden out unless he had some event.
Yeah, I think it would have to be some sort of emergency situation.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't see the Democrat Party. There was a time when they were pushing him out. Yeah. I think they feel pretty good about where he stands.
Yeah, I think the RFK thing, as much as it is fun, it's not going to end up
with... I think that's a longer-term move to maybe get the Democrat Party back in a party that can appeal to more...
Or to get that percentage to move to a Republican.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, to just say, you know what, I've had enough, and I'll support... Because I feel like there's more connections to DeSantis and Trump and RFK than there is to the Biden administration.
Yeah, right. All now, right. Definitely.
We got to wrap up. Talk to you tomorrow.